Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary from today's economic and political events. And this is December 29th. It's Thursday. It's still 2022. Good afternoon, Dave.
Glad you said two there at the end.
Of course.
Hello, Melody.
Yes, I was just adding a little suspense there, you know.
Hello, world.
Hello.
Happy National TikTok Day.
Oh, please. TikTok, yeah. Like in a clock?
Yes. It's not that bizarre social media platform.
All right.
It's on the verge of being prohibited in parts of the U.S. anyway. No, TikTok Day, which is observed annually on this day, December 29, reminds us to complete any unfinished business that might be lying around before the end of the year. Many items competing for attention as that's on the horizon. Some unfinished business actually needs to be wrapped up by the 31st. Things like larger business purchases, perhaps, and some charitable donations for the 2022 tax year. Do it by Saturday, December 31st. Another thing to consider is your medical plan. If you're working and have a flexible spending account, most of them are use it or lose it. Time's running out. And TikTok Day may also be a day to look at your personal goals. Did you finish reading that book you started on Thanksgiving or Labor Day? Bucket lists are calling us too. Where do we want to travel in the new year? By the end of this year, we may still need to explore some exotic foods and what have you. And perhaps most importantly, have you bought enough physical gold and silver to insure yourself and your family from the coming economic downturn? Hey, maybe your own goals are grander or simpler, whatever they are. TikTok, TikTok, Melody.
Well, that really is kind of apropos for today, and this is the last live program for the year. Well, we might have one tomorrow, but for the most part, this will be the last live show for 2022. And, you know, it's always a little, you look behind and you look forward, and I've done some of that today. I was going through some things, trying to button up some things for because there's so many days off. It's another 3-day weekend and it's just driving me crazy. I just want to get back to work. But, very good advice. Finish up so we can move on to another year. And that's all fine and dandy moving on to another year, except with that new year also comes another birthday. And those are the We don't like that part of the new year, but anyway.
Prefer it over the alternative still.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'll take it. Jobless claims. Wow. Jobless claims. Increased 225,000 last week. This is according to the Labor Department. Oh, I forgot to do the market report. Okay, Dave, you didn't stop me. You did that on purpose, didn't you?
I'm sorry. You know, it's the last.
Did you enjoy that?
It's the last broadcast of the year, and it's like, well, you know, I better have my market report screens up just in case.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had a good day in gold today, up in the New York spot price aftermarket, $1,817. That's up almost $12. Off the high of 1821. Silver's up 39 pennies at $23.99. Platinum was up $54 at $1,070, and palladium was up 28 at $1,898. The USDX today was down 0.60 at 103.89. Crude oil was down 34 cents at 78.62. Paper markets today, the stocks closed higher in this big year-end rally. The NASDAQ added 2.5%. The Dow was up a little over 1%. 33,220. The S&P was up 1.75%, 3,849. And the NASDAQ was up about 2.60%, up 264 points, 10,478. Asian markets were all negative. European markets, of course, they were all positive going into this New Year weekend. I'm sure there'll be a lot of light trading going on tomorrow. Markets are closed on Monday. Germany did the best overnight, up 1%. 10-year yield, 3.83. And natural gas today is fairly... Oh, I was looking at the RBO. I was going to say, what? 2.37. Natural gas was down 2% at 4.583. That natural gas is really beginning to come down. So that is good. We're seeing oil drop. You know, they'll talk about it being on China's uncertainty. U.S. demand limits decline somewhat. So we'll see where that's all headed. So now may I go to the jobless claims report?
Melody, go for it.
Okay. 225,000 last week from the Labor Department. That's up 9,000 from the previous week. Pretty much everybody was expecting pretty much what we got. I would think it's these numbers, again, are also pretty irrelevant because of the holiday and so forth. I mean, how many days is that reporting, Dave? You know, so we're not, I don't know if it's 5 days of reports or four, or I would think it would be light anyway, because, you know, people aren't thinking about going and standing in line and completing forms. So, but still, it looks like a very tight picture of the labor market. Continuing claims. These are the people that have received unemployment benefits for more than 1 week, increased to 1.71 million for the week ending December 17th. Okay, so... some saying that suggests workers may be having a little bit more difficulty finding a job, a new job. That's despite there being, 1.7 jobs available for every one worker out there. So anything you'd like to add to that, Dave?
Well, just I like to keep people's minds a little bit in the longer term. So we look at the 4 week moving average of these applications, which smooths out some of the week-to-week volatility. That's essentially the same. I mean, it slipped ever so slightly to 221,000. So, you know, compared to the 225 of last week, that's down real modestly, particularly in terms of where the Fed would like to see things. Should the Fed's rate hikes, both those accumulated to date as well as those expected in the early part of next year, beginning February, early February, should they cause a recession, which in our own humble opinions is a foregone conclusion, then a big jump in layoffs and unemployment claims would be an early sign. So it's good to keep an eye on this on an ongoing basis, Melody. The coming week, thousands of workers with temporary jobs, holiday jobs, are going to lose their work and apply for jobless aid. So we'll have to watch that. That's, you know, these seasonally adjusted numbers that complicate this figure further. And so on and so on. So we'll see what happens. Despite a lot of, I'm just surprised how this economy keeps adding so many jobs every month. The government's U6 unemployment rate staying steady around 6.7%. Don't believe that 3.7 now, ladies and gentlemen. That doesn't include discouraged workers, and there sure are a heck of a lot of them out and about, Melody.
Well, you know, you hear a lot of people, you hear a lot of stories and from business owners and everything about their employees, how, you know, they really been playing it with this COVID thing about, you know, they'll cry, they're sick, they get laid off and so forth, and then they go back. So, I mean, how much of an impact? I mean, it's not like I mean, so they would be included in those jobs created. So, mm-hmm. So if a person is just floating around, works a couple months, so that would kind of keep it, falsely high.
Artificially high.
Because these are not
new jobs.
These are not new jobs. It's the same job. They're just taking off, claiming ill, and then going back to work. So, I don't know. These numbers are just, I don't know how long it takes for that to be filtered through to where we would actually get, maybe some sort of a reality number, but the whole workforce is just kind of bizarre, with people working from home and so forth and whatnot. In some other economic news, you have pending home sales. They fell for a 6 month in November. Now, this is the second lowest on record as these higher borrowing costs and, the uncertainty of the economy is keeping some potential buyers out of the market. The National Association of Realtors Index of contract signings to purchase previously owned homes decreased 4% last month to 73.9. Now, that's the lowest outside of the pandemic in data back to 2001. Drop was worse than all estimates and surveys of economists. With borrowing costs roughly double where they were at the start of the year, home sales and therefore prices have been, we've been seeing it decline for months. Consumer rate, current home buying conditions as the worst since the early 1980s. Now, this is all according to the University of Michigan's monthly sentiment survey.
Yeah. I mean, Larry Young, who's the realtor's chief economist, says that there are approximately 2 months of lag time between mortgage rate changes and home sales. So with mortgage rates falling throughout December, home buying activity should inevitably rebound in the coming months, he believes, and actually help economic growth. Whether or not it's going to result in positive fourth quarter growth numbers, GDP numbers, we'll know by the end of January. But contract signings were down almost 40% from a year ago in November, with sales falling in all four regions of the U.S., particularly in the Northeast and Midwest. Pending home sales are often looked to as a leading indicator of existing home purchases, as properties typically go under contract a month or two before they're actually sold.
Okay, well, it's in all the headlines, it's in all the news, is Southwest Air cancels another 2,350 flights. So, what's really irritating, Dave, about all of this is they get billions of dollars continually from the government, and they still are having these issues. All the airlines, Southwest continues to extract itself from sustained scheduling chaos today. 2,300 flights canceled. Dallas carrier acknowledged it has inadequate and outdated operations technology. Like, are you kidding me? I think they got $8 billion through the pandemic, probably more. And it just baffles me that them having, in today's world, that they can leave flight crews out of position when adverse weather strikes. I mean, didn't they know we were going to have bad weather? Everybody and their brother did. And so Southwest has been the only airline unable to recover from the storm-related delays. That it's been over a week now.
Yeah, they say that they expect to be back on track by the end of tomorrow. We'll see. 96% of all flights canceled before noon today in the U.S., or Southwest routes. That's 58% of Southwest's entire schedule. Can you imagine the disruptions, both personal and business? 10,000, more than 10,000 cancellations They passed earlier in the week. I wonder how their unique brand of humor are going to address this mess, Melody.
I don't know, but do you think they're going bankrupt?
Oh, no.
What is their, do you know what their stock has been doing?
No, I haven't followed. I haven't followed. I can't imagine it's been good this week.
I hope they're not going bankrupt. Like, I really hope they're not. But anyway, because I got an airline ticket through Southwest. Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs. But anyway, Russia fires dozens of more missiles into Ukraine. Western observers are saying that the defensive U.S. Patriot missiles can't be shipped to Ukraine any faster. Well, I wish they'd slow that down, because I hate to see what's going to happen once they get there. And again, Russia's been targeting Kiev and Lviv and Odessa in the west. It's to be one of the largest aerial bombardments yet in this war that began earlier this year. Ukraine's military said it had shut down 54 missiles out of 69 that was launched by Russia. And it all started about 7 a.m. local time. Kharkiv, Ukraine's second largest city, firefighters have been working hard to extinguish a large blaze and an electricity station. And, you know, it's a good thing. We're going to talk a little bit about this later in the program. I think you have something on it. Is the warmer temperatures that Europe is actually having this winter. So I guess that's a good thing. So
certainly making for some muddy moving in Ukraine for both the foot soldiers as well as these vehicles, and especially the tanks. This barrage of missile attacks today, looking brutal. Some of the TV coverage. Mayor of Lviv said 90% of his city near the Polish border was without electricity now, where missiles hammered an energy infrastructure unit. It's just one day after the other. It'll be interesting, reluctant as we are to see more U.S. involvement in this, just to what extent their use of Patriot missiles eventually are going to offset some of these missile launches.
Well, I hear the music. We're heading into a break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm working for a
living. Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home. Oh, mercy, mercy,
all things and what they used to be. Hey, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, sitting in for Melody the rest of the program. She's going to take care of other business, heading into another extended holiday weekend. Now, briefly, start off this segment, sort of like he's back. Benjamin Netanyahu sworn in as Israel's prime minister again today in a comeback at the head of a cabinet that promises to expand Jewish settlements in the occupied West Bank, as well as pursue other controversial policies. Now, the 73-year-old political vet who's on trial for graft charges he denies has sought to calm concerns about the fate of civil rights and diplomacy since his bloc of nationalist and religious parties got a majority vote in the November 1 elections. Netanyahu has repeatedly pledged to promote tolerance and pursue peace, although his parliamentary allies, Jewish power parties, religious Zionism, which oppose Palestinian statehood and whose leaders, both of whom are West Bank settlers, have in the past agitated against Israel's justice system and its Arab minority. Netanyahu himself says ending the Israeli-Arab conflict was his top priority, along with thwarting Iran's nuclear program. So we'll keep you in the loop on what's going on as Benny enters his sixth overall term. All right. Occasionally, used to do it weekly. More recently, we've been doing it periodically as time permits. Our Levity is Golden segment. I guess you could say today's topic is our culture of sorts. And it looks like video games could move to the center of our entertainment and pop culture universe next year. As far as it seems, streaming services, Hollywood studios, tech giants, even the Saudi government are racing to capitalize on gaming's vast and ever-expanding popularity and its lucrative intellectual property. That's according to Axios Gaming author Stephen Totillo. Gaming, he says, now a $184 billion business, an idea factory for other media, and the leading edge of the tech industry, both as a business and a harbinger of industry policy battles. It's the foundational tech inspiring Meta's costly adventure into virtual worlds. It's also how Netflix plans to grow its subscriber base as the streamer tries to become a top video game developer and distributor. It's the industry that Saudi Arabia's ruling class has chosen to invest $38 billion in for the image and economic diversification. It's also the locus of a growing labor movement in tech, and it's a recurring Federal Trade Commission target. Now, the games themselves are poised for a blockbuster year. You got mega releases tied to Star Wars, Harry Potter, Final Fantasy, The Legend of Zelda, slated for the first half of 2023. Gaming movies are the biggest challenger to Hollywood superhero supremacy. This spring will bring the Super Mario Brothers movie, trailer in theaters on April 7th. That's a partnership between Nintendo and Illumination. That's the studio behind The Minions. And HBO's first prestige series of 2023, mid-January's The Last of Us, is an adaptation of a hit PlayStation video game. Streaming platforms are also preparing a pipeline of games-turned-shows, like adaptations of God of War, Fallout, and even Assassin's Creed. That always got me nauseous, by the way. Granted, breathlessness doesn't always pan out. Esports is growing awkwardly. It's still picking up viewers, but its poor profitability is scaring off new investors. And Google shuttering its Stadia game streaming platform in January. Mike Allen says this is what happens when a subculture has been deepening its roots for a half a century. Many of the first kids who grew up with gaming have become gamer parents, and now they're ready to pass gaming on to a new generation. Inside, young workers and players look around to see their once rebellious pastime as an establishment that needs to be challenged. Bottom line, from the world of Warcraft to Wordle, the new year may yet show, much to some of our chagrin, that it's a game lover's world out there. And that, Melody, wherever you may be, is today's levity is golden. Now, as Melody mentioned, alluded to in the first segment, European natural gas prices fell this week to levels not seen before Russia's invasion since then. That was last February. Front-month natural gas reserves on the Dutch Tidal Transfer Facility, the TTF, that's the benchmark contract in Europe, plunged in recent weeks to bottom out below 77 euros per megawatt hour. That's about 82 bucks in dollars. That's a level not seen since February, prior to the beginning of Putin's full-scale war in Ukraine. As of this morning, they're trading around 81.5 euros. Now, at their peak in August, European gas prices topped 345 euros as Russia's weaponization of its natural gas exports to the rest of the continent in response to punitive EU sanctions, plus high temperatures over the summer, drove up demand whilst restricting supply. And the spiking prices sent household energy bills into the clouds and have fueled a cost of living crisis across much of the continent as the cold winter is upon us. However, unseasonably warm weather through the winter so far in a lot of Europe, Northwest Europe, that is, has reduced demand for heating and actually has allowed the continent to replenish its gas inventory, follow drawdowns during several cold snaps over the past few months. Wall Streeters, like Too Big to Fail Goldman Sachs, predicted last month a sharp fall in European gas prices in the coming months as nations gained a temporary upper hand on supply issues. Berenberg chief economist Holger Schmieding explained, as a rule of thumb, a rise or fall in gas prices by 100 euros changes the gas bill of the Eurozone economy by an amount equal to almost 3% of GDP. Wow. But as electricity prices are still linked to gas prices, the total pain of high gas and the relief from any correction therefrom just might be more pronounced than the rule of thumb suggests. Last week, the EU agreed on a temporary mechanism to limit excessive gas prices, which comes into force on February 15th. Market correction mechanism will be triggered automatically if the front month price exceeds 180 euros for three consecutive days, and if it deviates by 35 euros or more from a reference price for global liquefied natural gas over the same three-day period. Interesting development there. Now, looks like more and more restaurants are testing robotics. But they say not to worry. Oh, no, we'll see. Chipotle Mexican Grill's testing whether a robot can make tortilla chips in its restaurants. Sweet Green plans to automate salad making in at least two of its locations And Starbucks, once its coffee-making equipment to lessen the workload for its baristas. Well, this year brought a flurry of automation announcement, and particularly the restaurant industry, as operators scrambled to find solutions to their shrinking workforce and climbing wages. But the efforts so far, they say, have been spotty. And experts say it will actually be years before any robotics pay off for companies, or more importantly, take the place of workers. David Henkes at Technomic, that's a restaurant research firm, said, I think there's a lot of experimentation that's going to lead us somewhere at some point, but we're still a very labor-intensive, labor-driven industry. Now, even before the pandemic, restaurants were struggling to attract and retain workers. The global health crisis exacerbated that issue, and particularly as many laid-off workers left their jobs and didn't return. Three quarters of restaurant operators say they're facing staffing shortages that keep them from operating at full capacity. Many restaurant operators hiked wages to attract workers, but that's pressured profits at a time when food costs have also been climbing. The automation startups pitch themselves as a solution. They say that robots can flip burgers and assemble pizzas more consistently than overworked employees, and that artificial intelligence can enable computers to take drive-through orders more accurately. Well, many of the industry's buzzy automation announcements this year came from Miso Robotics, which has raised an impressive $108 million as of November and has a valuation now of over $0.5 billion. Miso's flashiest invention is called Flippy, a robot that can be programmed to flip burgers or make chicken wings and can be rented for about $3,000 a month. The burger chain White Castle has installed Flippy at four of its restaurants and has committed to adding it to 100 more over the next few years. Chipotle, it's also testing the equipment. It calls its version Chippy. That's at a California restaurant right now, where it's trying to make tortilla chips. Miso CEO Mike Bell claims the highest value benefit that we bring to a restaurant is not to reduce their expenses, but to allow them to sell more and thus generate a profit. We'll leave it at that. Automation facing a lot of pushback from workers and their advocates who see it as a way for employers to eliminate decent-paying jobs. But restaurant companies have been touting these automated experiments as ways to improve working conditions for existing employees by doing away with tedious tasks. All right. Drought, supply chain shortages, rising cost of doing business all led to a difficult 2022 for American farmers. But one fourth generation dairy farmer says 2023 could be even worse. Stephanie Nash, who's a Tennessee farmer and an agriculture advocate, says, I definitely think we have a food security threat. I believe 2023 is going to be rough, worse than this year. Well, to back up her claim, she talks about food prices having been outpacing overall inflation this year. November food prices showed a 10.5% increase compared to last year, while overall inflation was just 7.1%. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, anyway. Now, a number of factors are contributing to these rising food prices, including a fertilizer and fuel shortage, extreme weather, and rising interest rates in an industry that relies on a lot of debt financing. Nash thinks there are going to be a lot of food shortages next year for sure. Going to have a supply chain shortage. an increase in food prices at the grocery store for farmers. I don't think it's going to go down anytime soon. I think Americans are really going to be hurting in their wallet. Now, most farmers, she says, take out short-term variable rate loans each year to pay for everything from seeds and fertilizer to livestock and machinery. And Nash says you have family farmers and ranchers that can't pay their bills. You talk about loans, that's a big deal. We have to be able to get paid more to make it, and we're making less than ever. Farming sector's total interest expense is forecast to hit over $26 billion this year. That's about one-third higher than last, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. High fertilizer costs, fuel, and land. Farmers have to decide whether they'll reduce their crops and cattle or endure somehow as they struggle to repay larger loans. And make matters worse, you have 53% of the lower 48 states in a drought, along with wildfires, have caused farmers across the country to reduce crops and cattle sizes. In fact, nearly three quarters of farmers saw a reduction in harvest yields this year due to drought, and two thirds of ranchers and livestock farmers reported selling off animals. Adjusted herd size is expected to be down 36%. And the biggest herd declines are in Texas, down 50, New Mexico at 43, and Oregon at 41. It's getting ugly out there, ladies and gentlemen. And now, just with a few seconds left in this segment, talked about how pending home sales have fallen 6 months this year. Well, Housing Affordability Index is out this month. I'm just going to read the bottom five and top five, the least affordable housing markets. Miami, L.A., New York City, Newark, New Jersey, Hialeah, Florida. They're the most expensive of the top five. Now, the most affordable housing markets are Lubbock, Texas, at number five. Cleveland at number four, Detroit three, Fort Wayne, Indiana nearby two, and the number one affordable housing market, Wichita, Kansas, where the average earner will spend only 16% of their income on the median priced house of about $147,000. Okay. Some more music means some more important messages. I hope you'll stick around for our final segment. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, one more time today. Welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of other client business. Call her toll free at 1-800-375-4188. A little bit of a Throwback Thursday action to bring on this segment. I vividly remember the first day of my American political policy class at the start of my sophomore year in college in the fall of, 1975. Our professor, Dr. Hugh Jones, asked his 30 or so students, what was the most political event of that summer? Well, there were the usual answers, including one I gave, followed by Professor Jones repeating, nope, not that. After each of us had tried our luck, some of our wrong answers were the Rockefeller Commission issuing a report on CIA abuses, three people dying in a shootout at the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, Teamsters President Jimmy Hoffa reported missing and later presumed to be dead, and President Ford posthumously pardoning General Robert E. Lee, all garnering Dr. Jones's nope. Then an upstart freshman pre-law student, I remember, first name Al, backup quarterback on our school's football team, whose last name I forget, with a vintage New York accent, I remember he was from the Yonkers, said, yeah, it was the president's visit to the Vatican to see the Pope. Bingo, was Dr. Jones' immediate and enthusiastic response. President Ford's visit to the Vatican to see Pope Paul VI was the most political event of that summer, according to Hugh Jones. So I guess it's in that vein that we fast forward several decades to hear that the health of 95-year-old Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI has deteriorated in recent days. It's according to a statement from the Vatican yesterday and again today. Former Pope led the Roman Catholic Church for nearly a decade before resigning in 2013, the first to ever do so in over 600 years. Since then, Benedict has mostly avoided publicity while reportedly living quietly on Vatican grounds. Pope Francis first acknowledged the former pope's worsening health during a weekly Wednesday address, breaking from his prepared speech to ask for prayers for his predecessor. The Vatican later confirmed that Benedict's health is in fact in decline, but is stable and under regular medical observation. Of course, his papacy was overshadowed by the church's ongoing clerical sexual abuse scandals. Now, this next one is, I got to preface by saying, please don't kill the messenger. Just more reporting, and I do it regardless of this person's political affiliations. When I was in grad school at the University of Maryland many, many moons ago, I approached my advisor with a few ideas for a potential thesis topic. One of them, initially my favorite, was an idea for me to run for state senator in the Maryland district I had recently moved to with a mythical resume that made me sound like a political prodigy. It was in the age before the internet was omnipresent and hardcore opposition research was only in its infancy. So I argued to my advisor that, hey, I could probably run and maybe even get close to winning, and in the process prove several technical points that were required by my department for my thesis. Well, decades later, as I look back, oh, how I'm grateful that my practical advisor said, no, I don't think so. But now here we are, many years later, with a newly elected member of Congress caught up in a series of lies about his past. U.S. Representative-elect George Santos of New York is now under investigation by Long Island prosecutors after revelations surfaced that the now embattled Republican lied about his heritage, education, and professional background as he campaigned for office. Now, despite intensifying doubt about his fitness to hold federal office, Santos has shown no signs of stepping aside, even as he publicly admitted to a long list of fibs. Nassau County District Attorney Ann Donnelly, also a Republican, said the fabrications and inconsistencies were nothing short of stunning. Quote, the residents of Nassau County and other parts of the 3rd District must have an honest and accountable representative in Congress. She added, if a crime was committed in this county, we will prosecute it. As it turns out, Santos is scheduled to be sworn in next Tuesday when the U.S. House reconvenes. If he does assume office, he could face immediate investigations by the House Committee on Ethics, as well as the U.S. Justice Department. The Republican has admitted to lying about having Jewish ancestry, a Wall Street pedigree, and a college degree to boot. But he's yet to address other lingering questions, which could lead to his legal difficulties, including the source of what appears to be a quickly amassed fortune, despite recent financial problems, including evictions and owing thousands of dollars in back rent. Fellow Long Island Republican, Representative-elect Nick Velota said, I believe a full investigation by the House Ethics Committee, and if necessary, law enforcement is required. A spokesperson for the Nassau County's DA office said they're looking into the matter, but their scope was not immediately clear. Joe Cairo, who chairs the Nassau County Republican Committee, which is within Santos's 3rd congressional district, said Congressman-elect George Santos has broken the public trust by making serious misstatements regarding his background, experience, and education, among other issues. And not to be outdone, New York Attorney General's office has already said it's looking into some of the issues that have coming to light. And not surprisingly, Democrats are calling Santos a serial fabulist and demanding he voluntarily not take office. In an interview with the New York Post earlier this week, Santos apologized for his fabrications, but downplayed them as sins over embellishing his resume, adding that, hey, we do stupid things in life. Yes, we do, George. He admitted to lying about working for Citigroup and Goldman Sachs, as well as having earned a degree in finance and economics from Baruch College in New York. Beyond his resume, Santos also invented a bogus story that claims his grandparents fled Jewish persecution in Ukraine, settled in Belgium, and again fled persecution during World War II. In fact, during the campaign, he referred to himself as a proud American Jew. But he backtracked on that claim, saying he never intended to claim Jewish heritage, which frankly would have raised his appeal among his district's significant ranks of Jewish voters. He told the New York Post, I am Catholic. Because I learned my maternal family had a Jewish background, I said I was Jewish. Whew. Now, in a statement, the Republican Jewish Coalition repudiated Santos. The coalition said he will not be welcome at any future event. Federal campaign records show that he loaned his campaign more than $700,000, but the source of that money has yet to be explained. His Democratic opponent, Bob Zimmerman, says Santos is actually unfit for office and has called for him to step aside so a special election can be held. Ugh. Makes you feel, ugh, ew. Okay, last today. State governments emerging from the pandemic have built historic cash surpluses as price inflation and wages have driven up sales and income tax collections. Now, some of those states are reaping another reward, banking millions of dollars off those surpluses as the Fed fights inflation with higher interest rates. Missouri Treasurer Scott Fitzpatrick says we're catching both ends of it. And Missouri's hardly alone. States ranging from Democratic-led Massachusetts to Republican-led Texas, as well as political-divided Minnesota, are all sitting on large surpluses that are swelling as we speak, thanks to better interest rates on their investments. Now, state pension plans are the one notable exception to this trend, but that's beyond the scope of what I'm talking about today. As legislatures prepare for their 2023 sessions, governors and lawmakers are proposing to tap into these surpluses to cover tax cuts, greater spending on priorities such as infrastructure, and education. Though most states can afford it, financial experts are nonetheless urging caution because of growing concerns that the U.S. will slip into a recession in 2023. Economist Phil Dean at the University of Utah said some of this is what I call a sugar high. The growth rates are definitely not sustainable. Now, California could be one harbinger of economic trends. After projecting an unprecedented $97 billion surplus just 7 months ago, state officials are now forecasting a roughly $25 billion deficit in next year's budget. California imposes higher taxes on the wealthy than most states do, leading the pendulum-type swings in tax revenues as the stock market rises and falls. State budgeters have labored through abnormally uncertain times since the pandemic began in early 2020. And as governors ordered shutdowns to try and slow the spread of the virus, layoffs skyrocketed and the states braced for huge revenue cuts. But federal relief payments put spending money in people's pockets. Labor markets rebounded, and the deep downturn was short-lived. State tax revenues surged well beyond expectations. And this year, fiscal 2022, record cash balance of nearly $343 billion in all the states. Large surpluses put states in a position to benefit as the Fed raises its benchmark interest rates beyond the seven times it did this year, making many loans more expensive in an attempt to slow spending and fight inflation. Texas had projected a $27 billion surplus for its current budget, boosted by strong sales taxes and energy revenue. That's likely to rise more than $30 billion when it revised revenue estimates released next month. And that's a larger surplus than the annual general fund expenses of 40 other states. Now, Governor Greg Abbott of Texas promised during his reelection campaign that half of that surplus would go toward property tax relief. Surging tax revenue in Massachusetts this year triggered a seldom-used state law requiring $2.9 billion of surplus be returned to taxpayers. Large cash balances allowed the state to collect nearly $57 million of interest in October alone. That's six times the amount earned during the entire 2021 fiscal year. And Minnesota is projecting a record $17.6 billion surplus for their next budget. Got a strong economy with one of the lowest unemployment rates in the nation. Combined, they pushed individual income sales and corporate tax revenues higher than originally projected. But political gridlock also contributed to their swollen coffers as the Republican-controlled Senate and Democratic-led House could agree on how to use all the extra money. So, thanks to higher interest rates on the huge surplus, Minnesota expects investment earnings of almost $500 million this year. That's a whopping 1,400% plus increase over a prior year. Now, Governor Tim Walz there said surplus could be used to provide tax rebates, increase investments in education, modernize infrastructure, and add charging stations for electric vehicles. He emphasized, we can do all of these things. This isn't a choice of either or. Well, Virginia finance officials expect the nation to fall into recession in 2023, depressing that state's tax revenues. Yet the state has so much extra money right now that its Republican governor, Glenn Youngkin, proposed an additional $1 billion in tax cuts and an additional $2.5 trillion in spending on education, economic development, and other areas. Citing a large surplus, Missouri Governor Mike Parson called lawmakers into a special fall session to pass what he described as the largest tax cut in the state's history. Time we have for today's program, the last live program of 2022. I'll be back next Tuesday in 2023 to help rein in the new year. Well, I don't know if we're playing music or doing a replay tomorrow, but Melody, and Butch will be back. Don't you fret. Look out for our blog tomorrow, too. Thanks to Todd for keeping us flowing this year. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.